The following episode of Faux Hop is rated MA. It contains alternating hosts, a rotating roster of guests, and mild coarse language. Faux Hop advises that it is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15, or anyone who came here looking for one of those highbrow NPR-type podcasts. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Hello and welcome to Faux Fop. I'm Charlie Clawson, and my returning guest this week is the one, the only, the 100% for himself, stand-up comedian Cam Knight. Welcome back to Faux Fop. Thank you. Last minute change of times, plans. What, in the last half an hour, we rescheduled like four times?
Yeah, we did. I always thought we were just going to do this tomorrow. You know what this is, though?
I thought you couldn't do tomorrow. You said you
got... I know we can't do tomorrow, but I thought you might just try anyway.
Right.
This is the perfect example of parenting.
Is that how you kind of assess me? I'm that kind of guy.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't need to hear enthusiastic consent. I'm just going to try and get you to pot against your will.
I'm going to cram you in anyway just to get you to do what I want to do. And then I may bend at some point.
Let me give you the tip of my podcast.
It's just like that's how parents sort of operate now. You know, you try and make plans with people and you're like trying to fill a diary to meet somebody, and it's always just opening up. You've seen it in every movie. There's just some cliche where they just open their diaries. I can't remember what film that was, and they're all just asking, can you do next Thursday? No, I can't. I can do the Saturday after. And it's just like, oh, fuck it, I'll see you next year.
Yeah.
You know, that's basically how it goes with kids and having to pick them up and work around their schedule rather than do what you want to do. Do you know what I mean? This is a parenting podcast, which Osher is going to be very angry about.
Oh, no, you know Osher. He doesn't
You've got me on the wrong one.
He doesn't get angry about anything apart from climate change.
Yeah, great.
It's funny because, you know, Gem and I, we live semi-rural, not entirely rural now, but there's just certain kind of logistics that living in the city, we've only ever had one car as a married couple. We've only ever needed one car because, you know, you can get anywhere you need with public transport, but that's not an option anymore. And so we are quickly learning that we have to get another car, which will also piss off Osher because I don't think we can afford an EV.
He rocked up the other day to my house in his electric Harley Davidson. I was like, oh, it must be nice. It must be nice to be so woke and to be able to afford all the trimmings that come with it.
I did a pod with him a little while back after he'd just been riding and you and Osh famously sober 5 years, is that right? Your congratulations.
Yeah, 5 years. Yeah.
But he was high as a kite after riding the Harley Davidson.
Yeah.
I mean, do you find that now as a sober person yourself, like, what are some of your natural highs like that you feel kind of equivalent?
Well, I can't afford an electric Harley Davidson. I just stand out in the road and scream when they go by. That's my little buzz, you know.
You just run really fast.
Yeah, just like, oh, as fast as an electric Harley.
Have you seen Cam Knight? He's got an old ice cream tub strapped to his head and he's running around making motorbike noises.
Yeah. We've been funny with those plastic things sticking up just so I don't get swooped by magpies. What a good look. That's me. People are like, is that Cam Knight or homeless? What is that? I found when I first stopped, because all you're doing, you're craving this release of endorphins or dopamine, basically. You know, you're missing out on that that release that you get from alcohol. So I did find in that first year when I gave up that I was smashing a very large block of chocolate every night. Like that was my sort of my hit, you know. And I have, I sort of go off and on with exercise as well. But there's
Or that's endorphins.
You get both really, because you feel like a sense of achievement from doing these certain things. And so you get this little endorphin hit and then this dopamine hit because you feel like, oh, I've done something nice for myself. Like, even, you know, what's really funny, like I was seeing this thing on TikTok the other day about, someone who's sober. And they were talking about this very thing, just saying, you know, here's something that you can do to give you a hit of dopamine. And it is the most mundane thing. And it's just write yourself a list.
Oh, yeah.
Write yourself a list and then just tick off the things on the list. Even if one of the things on the list is write yourself a list. And I was like, that's not going to cut it for me, man. Like, I don't think that that is going to work. Getting organized or pretending to be organized is not going to replace getting absolutely shit-faced at a music festival. I'm really sorry. You know?
I mean, it's always like when you see an ex-addict, if they're still smoking or, you know, or there's something that they are involved in, and you can see just like if you see watch an ex-addict smoke a cigarette, mate, they will fucking like right suck in. That thing yeah. right to yeah. the very nub. And it's like you're like, oh, I see what's going on here. It's like you've controlled yourself to a point, but you've got to give yourself this one vice. Otherwise, you'll tip over the edge. And so you're just going to enjoy every last bit of that little thing.
Exactly. You just want that hit. You want to feel it. But I found as well, like I remember when I went away to Japan with a bunch of mates and our mates that, you know, that for my 40th, and I knew that when I came home, I was going to quit. And so that was like this big last hurrah. So I thought, oh, you know what, while I'm over here, I might as well, I'll start smoking again, which I hadn't smoked for years and years and years, but it was just very cheap. And I thought, oh, this is fun. And then I got home back here, quit drinking, and found I was smoking cigarettes for about 2 months on the sly.
Right.
So I've just like been hiding it and then just thought, what are you doing? And so then started chewing Nicorette gum.
Oh, I remember that phase. Yeah, when you're always
mate,
chewing.
Mate, what phase? What do you mean? I'm still chewing them.
You got them right there.
I've just got them right here, right now in front of me. I'm holding them up in front of you for the people listening at home. But yeah,
Cam's got like a bandolero of Nicorettes around his waist, like Chewbacca. Literally, like Chewbacca.
That's right.
Chew non-backer.
That's like, so I've been chewing Nicorette for 5 years. So, yeah, great. Osha's got a Harley and I've got gum problems. Like, I don't know. I need to find something. I don't really know what sort of hobby I have either anymore, because when I came out of this thing, all I had was what I do for a living and, you know, being a parent and that sort of thing. But I kind of had all of the other things that I used to enjoy doing had fallen to the wayside. And I wondered if I was A, fit enough to do half of those things, and B, even remotely interested in attempting them once again, like going surfing again or rock climbing, or, you know, to get that sort of rush from those sorts of situations. And I still, you know, it's also just trying to fit in the time to go and do that. And then, you know, I mean, the world ended, so everything was closed, so I couldn't go rock climbing or anything like that. But, you know, it's just... There's not much I get a release from. I'm very sad, Archie. Charlie. I just called you Archie, my son's name.
Well, fair enough.
That's I'm sad, much. Kid. I'm sad, Archie.
Well, I'm younger than you by 1 year, I think. So that kind of works out. I could sort of be your son in some twisted universe, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I have found that exercise, I actually went for a run today. I don't have much time to kind of like do runs anymore. But Ayanna was in daycare, Jem was away. And so, in Byron, there's the lighthouse, which is, it's the lighthouse run. So you run along main beach and then the last 500 meters is like vertical and such a real killer. And I was waiting for the runner's high to come. Like I killed myself. I could barely get up there. Like I was stumbling like a geriatric. Got to the top, allowed myself like 30 seconds to breathe. And then it's sort of downhill, but it's a painful downhill run. And I thought any second now I'm going to get that rush of endorphins. I'm going to feel great. Didn't happen. And then I was slowed to a walk when I got back to my starting position. I was like, well, I'll just walk into town and I'll just wait for that rush of like dopamine. It didn't happen. And I was like, holy fuck. So I put on my t-shirt and was like, I'm just going to go to a cafe. And I went in and sat down at the cafe. And I could sense it like the waitress just as, you know, when someone's looking at you weird and you don't know why. Mm. And then when I looked in the mirror, I had this weird blotching effect. Like I was red-faced, but like it wasn't an even red face. It was like if my brain was having an aneurysm and all the blood had pumped to kind of like three quarters of my face, but I still had this like glowing white blotch. And I looked terrible. Like so not only did I look bad, but I felt terrible. And I'm like, is this what happens when you get older? It's just diminishing returns because you sort of don't, your body's not recovering like it used to. Like you can't just, A, you can't, you know, party and then go exercise. And B, even if you're not partying, which I'm not, just even regular exercise is fucking painful. And you're not getting any of that. Because you look at all this Hollywood.
Not getting it. I mean, like, it's funny that you say that because I used to blotch up if I drank too much red wine. Right. So, you know, it's on the same, you know, on the both ends of the spectrum, it's dangerous. You end up just looking like you need to go to hospital. But I went for a run a few months ago myself because I hadn't been for ages since I snapped my Achilles.
Oh, yeah, right.
And I was exactly the same as you. And I did a run, you know, from Coogee down and did these hills and steps around, you know, Gordon's Bay and Clovelly. And it was, mate, honestly, I was basically walking, but up and down to make it look like I was jogging. Yeah. It was pathetic. Yeah. It was a really pathetic run. And I was sort of concerned, oh, what if I snap my Achilles again? You know, just take it easy, champion. But honestly, about 10 minutes in, I was like, this is not good. And anyone who's seeing me is knowing that this guy is unfit. And I was exactly the same as you. I got home expecting this little hit. And I lay down on the couch and fell asleep.
It's been 4 hours and I'm cooling down now and I'm just starting to get really kind of like rigor mortis in my calves and my back and my legs. And the thing about it too was as I was getting near the kind of pinnacle of the hill, I don't know if it's pinnacle, what do you call it? The apex.
Yeah.
I had to pass two kind of real rough looking, tough looking dudes who were just doing a walk.
Yeah.
And because I had headphones in, but I fucking knew that as soon as I passed them, they were joking about me because I was laboring really heavily at that stage.
Yeah.
And like, because I came up behind them, so I had to say, you know, on your right or whatever it is, so they'd make room for me. But yeah. I just knew by the look of these guys, and you could just feel it, that as I'm, because the last part of that run is like, I don't know, 70 steps straight up. And so I was just like, throwing my weight from one side to the other, like an elephant that's been sedated, just like lumbering. Yeah. And in my head, I wanted to stop. I was in so much pain, but I was like, I can't give these guys behind me the satisfaction.
Because they're like, watch, he's going to stop. He's going to start crying. Is he crying? I think he is crying.
Everyone has got their phone out and they're from Brown Cardigan and they're just, I'm going to be one of those highlight packages of those people doing bizarre exercises. That'll be me.
Yeah. I used to find too, though, did you ever get this back when you were younger? And I was just talking about this again to a friend the other day, just how much I sort of put my body on the line in certain situations and must have put a real strain on my body, really, where like you would exercise, you'd go to the gym or go for a run or whatever, and you would feel so pumped, like so high and charged from that. And the first thing that I wanted to do with that feeling was go to the pub. Did you ever do that? Like, and I did. And I was almost as if I was justifying my actions by doing that exercise and vice versa. Like I had to justify that I was still keeping fit to earn that drinks. But it really meant I was like, I have to go. I'll go into the pub. This is going to be a great night.
Do it the other way around. I used to smoke a joint and then go for a run. And I remember like our mate Ruth, she said the same thing. She's like, I don't understand. It's like, there's something about, I don't know, the spaciness of it or the kind of, you know, my brain was starting to kind of, you know, have all these weird and interesting thoughts. And I was like, oh, this is a, you know, it's like when you're going, for me, it was like running and listening to a podcast, except the podcast was happening in my mind. But the only issue with that is that if it is a particularly difficult run, because, you know, marijuana enhances everything, but it also enhances bad.
Except for fitness.
What?
Except for fitness.
Yeah. Well, but also.
Your lungs burning?
But if you're in pain or if you're anxious and you smoke a joint, it's just going to make your anxiety worse. And it's the same with physical pain as well. Like if you've got like a tight calf and you smoke a joint, all of a sudden you become incredibly focused on that little like knot in your calf. And so that's what happened to me where I was like, it was like the paranoia. I was like, I'm going to pop something here because I could feel it. I was trying to go up these steps and I was like, it's going to. And so then I'm like, But then you're having this other internal dialogue, which is like, but you can't stop running because that's what losers do, man. So I'm having this really unpleasant, paranoid experience, you know.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, like someone from Brown Cardigan's got their phone out and they're just
getting going, this is going to go great for me.
Yeah.
It's not going great for him, but this is going to get a lot of views. Yeah, that's awful. I don't know. Like, I don't think I could ever run stoned. Like, I mean, I'm not that I've smoked weed for years and years, but did it burn your lungs at all, though? Or did you feel like you were getting the oxygen in? I would get so paranoid that even if my heart was racing, I'd be like, I'm going to die, because that's pretty much how I felt any time I smoked pot anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, well, that's why it just didn't agree with me.
Yeah, I think, well, that is, that, you know, this is something I haven't done it in a long, long time. But, yeah, that is probably why I did stop doing it, because all of a sudden you do get paranoid. And there's also the other thing, too, of just like, you know, if you've got your headphones on, you don't want to be distracted and you wipe out like a kid or someone, you know, is walking their chihuahua and you step on it.
Well, the people like from Brown Carded, and they certainly do.
Yeah, they're praying for that. How do you think it works with those videos on Brown Cardigan or any kind of, you know, fail Instagram page or whatever, where people post like videos of real life? Like, if someone is in a public space, are you just allowed to film them and then repost it? Like,
I don't know. I think, look, it's a pirate's den, isn't it? It's that's the internet, really.
Well, I was curious. I remember reading something on, I don't know, one of their Facebook or whatever their online representation is, Brown Cardigan, and they said something along the lines of, hey, don't be a dick. Like, get the permission of the person you're filming. We don't want you to be like out, you know, just. But I'm like, surely they're not getting all these people.
No way. There's a lot of people having absolute meltdowns.
Yeah, and getting filmed from like, you know, a building site or something. Yeah, where there's absolutely no way you're running down to get permission.
I'm sure if like someone's like just got kicked in the dick by their kid, they'll be like, yeah, that's pretty funny. He did. I mean, he did get me, the little ripper. But then there's others that you just think, no, there's no way they're asking.
Would you just say when you popped your Achilles, because you were doing that bouncing on a tramp with your nephew, right? Or your kids.
Yeah, I was jumping on the trampoline.
Okay, so theoretically, you know, your theoretical cousin was filming that and he showed you and he was like, this is pretty funny, man. Do you mind? Can I post this to Brown Cardigan? Would you be like, yeah, all right.
I'd just be like, just cut it out. Just cut it when I start crying. Can you do that, please? And calling for my mum, just that bit. Like, it's okay. It's okay if you just hear the crack and then I fall to the ground. That's fine. But, like, yeah, but just all the other stuff where I look really sad and broken, just cut that out. That was the most emasculating thing, by the way,
right.
Like to do that in front of my nephew. Because, like, there's nothing worse than falling to the ground in front of your nephew, just like screaming, get your mum. Like, that was because my sister was on the other side of the bloody park. And I'm like, you better go and get your mum. Your uncle's done himself a disservice. Like, I don't think he looks me in the eye properly anymore, even after that.
I remember you telling me about it. And you were saying that it's like, if you think about your Achilles like a rubber strap,
it's two mop heads.
Yeah. When it snaps, but it kind of retracts.
Yeah, yeah.
And just the visual of that just is so full on.
It's immense. Like, I honestly thought that my nephew had kicked me in the back of the leg. I thought he was trying to trip me up because I just felt it go. And it wasn't until I went down on the ground and I went to stand back up again and I couldn't. I fell over.
Oh,
and then I looked
God.
Down and I saw a gap of about 2 inches where the Achilles was and just pushed through and could touch my bone and went, I'm in a bit of trouble here. And then it just started cramping up. Like, it felt like I had a really bad cramp. And I went to straighten my leg instinctively, like in footy, you know, how you'd go, oh, I've got to stretch it. And I went, oh, God. I was like, that's the worst thing to do because it'll retract up further and it's harder for them to retrieve it because they'll have to cut right in. They come in and pull it back down again.
It's like when you got tracky dacks and the drawstring goes.
Drawstring's gone too far, yeah. And then you're going to get your mum to come in with a paper clip.
Yeah, she's
like,
no,
you really should learn to do this yourself one day, Cameron. Yeah, yeah, it's like that, but on a grander scale. That is the worst injury to recover from, by the way. I don't think I'm ever going to run again is where I'm landing on right now.
What about
after that last run that I did? I think I just thought, I think I'm done with running. I'm at that age where I think there's other ways that I can keep fit without having to feel completely emasculated by
that act. I keep thinking I'm going to have some kind of like transformation where I'll just be like a yoga guy. Like I'm like, oh yeah, because you know, yoga people all look really fit. And it seems to be kind of like it doesn't seem to be like really tough on the body. Obviously, you know, like it's strenuous activity, but it's not like high
impact. You're gonna get a lot of yoga enthusiasts calling in now. Or I don't know how you have contact with them, calling in like this calling is a radio station. No, you know, just text through to the text line on 1-800-TOEFOP.
They're
going to be angry at you because they think it is. They think it is very.
I'm not trying to take the piss. I think it is very like strenuous. And I've done yoga before. Like, there's a couple of years I was way into it.
Was that because you were the only man in the room?
Well, yeah, man. Like Gemma was trying to get me into it and I was like, I don't want to do yoga. And she took me to one class and I'm like, this is dumb. And then everyone went to Downward Dog and I'm like, ooh, bums. Like
this is juvenile.
I could do this. But I mean, that was one of the issues for me though is I find that yoga, there's this kind of conflicting ideology where, you know, your instructor's always saying, just go as, you know, listen to your body and breathe through things and only go as far as you want to go. And, you know, it's not a competition and it's not about being the best. It's just about working to your capabilities. But at the same time, they're also saying, but, you know, you'll get into a pose and they go, now see if you can go a bit deeper. And then the instructor will come over and, like, you know, push your hips down. It's like, hang on. You said, like, work to my capabilities. But I'm also an inherently competitive person. And so I'm looking around the class and like all the girls are heaps more flexible than the guys. I think just naturally, you know, girls, they just are. And so I would look at the dudes and be like, well, I've got to be more flexible than him. You know? And I've got a bloody top knot over there. I've got to be more flexible than him. And it's like, that's the complete opposite philosophy of yoga, which is all about like letting go and being part of the flow. And if anything, it's a big communal experience. We're all breathing and breathing out at the same time. And I'm just fucking eyeing off some guy being like, I'm going to be the best stretcher.
I'm better than you. Fuck you.
I'm going to get lower and stretch harder than you.
Yeah. I agree with you. Like that's been my experience at yoga too. I only started doing that again during the pandemic, actually. I just started doing it here at home on the lounge room, just on YouTube, just watching this YouTube girl. And it was just like, just me and her, you know, and it was like a date.
A little special time.
Yeah, it's like a little time. We're like, hello again. How are you? I'm fine. I'm answering her back. I was very lonely. Anyway, so it was, I found that was quite beneficial. I ended up getting to do some pretty cool stuff. I learned how to do the crow pose. And then
the one where you balance on your hands with your
elbows? Yeah, you balance on your hands. Yeah. And then you can do a real slow lean forward and rest on your head and then go into a handstand.
Yeah.
And when I achieved that, like I was pretty impressed with myself and kind of wishing that I was in a yoga class right now to beat that other guy.
Yeah, to show
look at this fuckhead, I'm upside down. What are you doing?
Well, the other thing, vinyasa, the type of yoga I was doing is like a slightly heated room. Like I think it's like, you know, 25-30 degrees or something. So you sweat quite a bit and I'm already a sweater. I don't need any extra humidity in the room.
Yeah.
And more than once, because I am so sweaty, anytime I'd lie on my back, I'd get that suction on my mat. And so then I'd move and just be that big.
That's your excuse for farting, is it?
That's exactly.
Like, no, it's because I'm so sloppy. It's got nothing to do with the fact that these poses are squishing everything out of my internal organs and I'm farting.
It is because I'm so sloppy. And I also think like I do like that part of the area where I carry the most around of kind of fat is like spare tire around my gut and my back. And that's like the extra, like if you're going to make a fart sound, that's the best spot because your hips pivot like that. So you get all that fatty, sweaty, fatty flesh lifting off the mat and then coming down at the same time. It's just the perfect fart sound. And I started getting really self-conscious and to the point where I'd like bring in like two bath towels and lay them over my mat just to make sure that there was no rubber hitting skin because it was just too embarrassing.
That's hilarious. My kids, I tried to teach my kids how to do that under their armpit the other day.
Yeah, how'd they go?
They're terrible at it, but they'll get there.
Can you do this?
Small steps.
I can't do it with my hands.
Oh, you do it with your hand. They would think you were a bloody hero.
That's master level. I don't know anyone who can do this.
No, I can't do that.
In fact, Jeremy and I made a short film that was sort of based on my life in which the character had to do that. And the actor wasn't able to do it. So I had to do it in ADR to go in. So are you doing a Melbourne Comedy Festival this year?
No, it's really hard for me to get away from the family for that amount of time now, given the circumstances, the situation.
Yes.
Basically, I can't really run off for a month and ask my ex to look after our children just because I want to follow my dreams. So I just figured I'd stay put, really. It's unfortunate, but the festival's not going anywhere. It's not like I won't do it again, but no, I haven't. The only festival that I'll be doing is Sydney Comedy Festival. I'm just trying to stay as local as possible. I think following this pandemic, it's kind of made me take stock and want to be around my kids a lot more as well. I think that's probably going to ruin my career, but it will make me feel like I'm a good father.
Why will it ruin your career?
Because I won't be able to go as many places and do as many things. I'm just sort of staying in Sydney for now. Unless something, unless a guarantee comes along, I don't, if it is, we will give you this much to do this thing, where it's justifiable to leave for that amount of time. It's not that Melbourne wasn't lucrative, but it's a long amount of time to be away with, to put a strain on her. And I'd rather not put pressure on her. This got serious, didn't it?
No, it's fine. I mean, this show can be whatever we want it to be. But I mean, we've sort of faced the same. Jem is the one who's traveling more often than me. I've done a bit of traveling, but it's really hard. And it's especially hard for Iona because of the mother-daughter connection thing. Like dad's fine and dad's okay, but I know where I rank. Like, I'm Scottie Pippen, mum, and Jem's Michael Jordan, like everyone loves Scottie Pippen, but they really came to see Michael Jordan. And it's funny too, because Jem's been away for like most of this week. She's been filming something up in Queensland, and Iona's at an age now, 2.5, where she's kind of aware of, people going away and coming back and, and days of the week and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
But she's kind of been, like, I can see her trying to wish into existence like a different answer. Like, she knows that Jem's not coming back till, the end of the week, but every day she'll ask me, when's mum coming back? Can I give mum a hug? Can I give mum a cuddle?
Yeah.
And part of me is like, oh, that's so sweet. She misses her mum. And part of me is like, hey, fucking hell. Like, dad's right here.
Where am I, chop liver? I'm right here. I can give you hugs and kisses,
Oh, my God.
Is it the beard? Is it the beard? You don't like the beard? It's a bit prickly, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's yesterday was like, I had her for the full day, no daycare or anything. So from like go to woe. And it's the first proper like, difficult, terrible twos day I've had with her. She's normally pretty good, but she just, everything was resistance. Like everything was a fight from the moment she woke up yelling at me to like making her breakfast and then trying to get her dressed and trying to brush her hair. And then, I went to give her a kiss and I got too many prickles. And then we go to a playground. She doesn't want that playground. She wants this other playground. And she's trying to describe the playground she wants. And she keeps saying like the rocket playground. And I'm like, what rocket playground?
I've had exactly this same experience.
Oh, really?
It's always they've named the park after one thing in the park that you didn't actually pick up on.
Yeah.
It's like the ship park or the rocket park. And you're like, man. And I end up turning into like a grumpy old pinnickety man just going, I grew up, we only had one park. It was one park or the backyard. And I know you don't have a backyard because we live in a bloody apartment, but still, you've got an abundance and you end up feeling like an asshole.
I felt like so judged because we get to the beach and she loves being nude. And so she's like, I want to be a nudie baby. And I'm like, okay, you can be a nudie baby. And so I put the sunscreen on her and let her run to the beach nude. But then the sun really popped and it got really hot. So after about 10 minutes, I'm like, just come put a bathing suit on. I don't want you running around. Just, it's too much skin exposure. And she was like, no. And then so that became one thing. And, you try and be rational and negotiate and that's not working. And so then I just had to pick her up and carry her back to the bag where all the, her bathers were. And she's screaming and wriggling and stuff. And I finally get her into her bathing suit and she's like trying to rip it off and screaming at me and stuff and calm her down enough to go down to the water. And so we're, walking through the water and then it's getting like late and I need to get her back for something to eat and maybe have a nap and stuff. And so again, this whole process starts up and I'm like, listen, and I tried everything. I tried like the fake walk away. I tried, you know, to explain to her. I tried to like bribe her with promises of ice cream, whatever. She would not leave this where she was playing. And so again, I said to her, like, listen, you can either come with me now, you can walk on the beach together, or I'm going to pick you up and I'm going to carry you there like a baby. And so she refused. And so I picked her up, and it was like, if I was on the foreshore, I would be like, this kid, this guy's abducting this kid.
Yes.
From the amount of resistance. She was screaming, like shrieking. And I'm like a feral cat. She's climbing all over me and trying to get away.
Yeah.
And I'm and the lifeguards are looking at me, and I'm like, that's my daughter. Yeah, like, this is 100% my daughter. I'm definitely not a kidnapper. This is my daughter. And then like I get up to the foreshore, and it's like, oh shit, she's covered in sand. She's gonna go down for a nap. I'm gonna have to wash her. So then trying to get her to have a shower, and she's covered in sunscreen and then water. So she's slippery like an eel now. So I'm trying to like, and she's running away from me. So you just feel so powerless in the situation, because it's like, you can't physically restrain them. You can to an extent, but you're not going to be like forcibly, but you've got to somehow assert dominance, and you don't want to yell because you don't want to be yelly dad, and you can't be physical. So in the end, you're just like, corralling, you know, like I'm just sort of like, she's kind of run that way and I'm stopping there and just run that way. And then finally I'm just like, should I just stop? Should I just give up? I mean, maybe is that the lesson here, is that the kid wins and I just let her burn herself out? So I did. I just went and sat on the grass while she just sat like underneath the shower, like, and just picked up rocks and threw them on the ground. Like that was just, I could not get her to follow me for any reason. And then after about 5 minutes of that, she was like, okay, I'm ready to go now.
Yeah, I think you did the best thing. That's the best thing to do. Just let them burn it out. That happened to us in the middle of Melbourne. I was walking and I was carrying Archie back from a park that he didn't want to leave. And he did exactly the same thing, had a full meltdown. I had to carry him sideways, like carrying a log while he was having a fit in my arms and screaming. And it was exactly the same thing. We were looking at passers-by were looking at us concerned. Like, it just makes you feel like you have totally abducted a kid. But no, you just got to let them burn it out. Like, I just do that all the time now with any of them. I just work. I actually say, because they can say some pretty snarly, cutting things, you know, at the age that my kids are at now, which is very, it can bait you. You know they're doing it on purpose. They want to get a rise out of you. And sometimes I have taken that bait and it's awful. But most of the time now I just say, I don't want to be around you, and I don't think that you should be around me at the moment. And when you're willing to and ready to come back and be a part of this family again in a more composed manner, like that, you know, you can do that. But right now you can just spend that time on your own. And they just either they'll scream and scream and scream on their own, wherever they are in the house when that's taken place. Like, I don't really send them to their bedroom a lot because I don't want them to associate their bedroom with a negative space. Like, that's where you go to be punished. Do you know what I mean? So it's just like, wherever you are, have your mess, and then you can come back out again. And it usually works. But it's hard because some of the stuff they say, Jesus Christ, like if I said that to an adult or an adult said that to me, like, I wouldn't be fucking friends with them again, you know? You'd just be like, man, I don't like you. That is awful. Who says that sort of shit to anybody? They get away with it.
First thing she said to me when she woke up this morning, she said, good morning, big nose.
Awesome. So good. Jesus Christ. What a great start.
Like, I don't have a big nose by anyone's bloody estimation, but she was lying like right next to me and she just woke up and she said, good morning, big nose. Like,
yeah.
So that's,
they call me, like, my kids call me fat all the time, and I'm not fat. Like, I know I'm not fat, and they're just always like, you got a fat gut. So it's like, man, that is 100% pure Wagyu beef, mate. Like, I'm solid. Marvel. You know, there's nothing, there's nothing on there that's bad. And they're always just like, you're a fat dad, you big fat bum, you big fat bum, and just start punching my bum. Like, it's insane.
Yeah. But, she's done this thing. I don't know how long this, if it's a phase or whatever, but so she goes down in her bed, but we've got an adjoining door to our bedroom and hers. And so around about early morning, she'll push the door open and come in and sort of spend the last couple of hours with us, like before she wakes up. But I've been down this weird rabbit hole. I think I'll probably talk about it more on TOEFOP. But long story short, I've been watching a lot of boy band music videos.
Why? What's wrong with you?
It's a long story, but I just Iona, when I drive her to daycare, she loves to listen to the Spice Girls, Wannabe. So that's what we'll put on. And then Spotify will naturally roll into, you know, similar genre era songs. And so I started like listening to this band Five, which is like they were a boy band in the late 90s, an English boy band. And it just got in my head. Like the songs got in my head. And then I started looking at the music videos on YouTube. And then I started wondering what had happened to them. And then I found this like documentary on them from like, anyway, long story short to say that, because the way the band split up, like there's a lot of psychological damage was done to all of them. In fact, this thing that I've been watching, this reality series, which was all these, not just boy bands, but like pop acts from the 90s and stuff, they all seem to have huge psychological problems. Like it felt like at least one member of the band attempted suicide at some point, sort of either during or post fame. And there's this one story that one of the guys tells where, you know, the band broke up. And so, you know, he got a solo record deal for a few years, but nothing ever really happened. And he kind of was just addicted to being a celebrity. You know, he hadn't quite accepted that, you know, that time had moved on. And so he was just like, you know, living, just leeching off people. He's just sort of, you know, he was just a famous guy who would, you know, would just stay at someone's house because he was famous. And he told this story that some rich, you know, English society lady just kind of adopted him, just gave him like a bedroom in her mansion. And he said it was just nonstop parties, like 7 days a week, you know, there'd just be people coming around and partying because they're just these rich, you know, royals or just wealthy from wealthy families. And that's how they filled their time. He'd wake up in the morning and there'd be like a plate of cocaine and like a vodka lemon sorbet beside his bed. And he'd be like, all right, well, time to start the day.
Wow.
And he said it got to a point, excuse me, where this guy who he didn't name, but he sort of alluded to this person being quite a famous either politician or you know, royalty in the UK, offered to buy him a brand new Bentley if he could have sex with him.
And he's,
and he was like, yeah.
Did he do it?
Well, he's gone, well, yeah, I wouldn't mind a Bentley. And then he said that was the point, which was like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, what has my life become where I'm living in this alternate reality with all these people who just don't have any grasp of the real world? You know, they're all super wealthy or super influential and they just live this decadent lifestyle. And I've become this pet. Like, that's what he'd become, is like this celebrity pet to this like lady. And now, like, you know, some prince or duke or whatever is trying to fuck him for a Bentley. Anyway.
And I tell you what, though, like, I am. Well, you know, I could be a couple of months away until I actually take somebody up on that if they wanted to get me an electric motorbike. That's for sure. I mean, I am.
Is that what it anyway. Would? Well, so what would it take? So
that's, I mean, my price.
Just an electric motorbike? I mean, he's talking about a Bentley. That's like $250,000 car. I think you can get those.
Yeah, no, but driving a Bentley's not going to give me that dopamine hit that I'm chasing like Osher, you know? So really.
Getting reamed by some very famous politician might give you some kind of dopamine hit.
How old was the guy? He might not be that enthusiastic, you know? He might be just a little old and he might not be getting reamed, so to speak. It could be just a gentle cuddle from behind. Maybe. You never know, you know?
Could have been. So I was watching.
Anyway, how are you thinking about all of these things in bed with your child?
No, that's the thing. So this is, I was watching these on my iPad before I went to sleep and that story really fucked with my head. And I sort of went to sleep having all these weird dreams about like fame is a fucking trap and, you know, or feeling so sorry for all these people who just get like used and abused by the system and stuff. And then like I woke up to Iona sort of like saying, you know, with Tony wanting to get into bed. And I got really like emotional and was like, you know, like I've got this and this is real and you're real. And I absolutely went to give her a hug and she's like, ah, like she rejected me.
It was just like, shut up, big nose.
Yeah, shut up, big nose. It was like, oh man, like it was just that I was at a point where I was feeling really emotionally vulnerable. I was like, well, at least I've got family because family is forever. And then she's like, get fucked, old man. I just came here for the bigger bed, not you.
Yeah. You're like, oh man, I could have a Bentley right now, but no, I chose you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we didn't have her, then we could probably afford a second car, but you know, as it is.
What are you going to get? Are you, here's the thing. Who gets the second car? Are you going to get a second car? So then do you get to choose your type of car?
No, no. We'll just share both cars. I think it'll just be a case of whoever. We just need a local runner car that we can do shopping and, you know, daycare runs and all that kind of stuff. And then our nice sort of main car, which is for interstate travel and long distances and that kind of jazz.
I really want to, I need to get a new car too, but I was thinking about what I wanted and I was sort of fantasizing about the sort of car that I wanted when I was younger, which I'm definitely not going to get now because it would be such a midlife crisis move.
What is it?
Like I've always wanted a Sandman.
Oh yeah.
Like
yeah.
I know, right? And they look so good just with the writing on the side, Sandman and the bubble windows and stuff. Or there's a bogan in me from the country that still wants a hotted up Hilux. Don't ask me why, but I just do. But how's this? Not long ago, I was at my local coffee shop and I was getting a coffee and then I hear this engine, this big engine coming up the street, just and it pulls up and I turn around going, wow, that's something nice. Turn around. It is a beautiful red Sandman and it's got black striping and the black writing on the side. And I was just, you know, drooling, just looking at this thing. And then the guy who gets out of this thing he had like chino pants on and a like a check shirt tucked into his chino pants, you know, and he looked like a wine salesman or somebody worked, you know, like he looked like a wine rep or an accountant. And I looked across and he got out and shut the door. And I didn't know at the time, I thought I was speaking in my head, but I actually audibly said, oh, fuck off. Like, I'm just angry that he owns that. Cause in my head, that's a person like that can't own a Sandman.
Yeah.
And also, it made me mad knowing that his life choices afforded him that car and mine haven't. It was just this moment. Everyone looked at me in the cafe and I was like, oh, sorry. I had to walk out.
There's an Instagram account I follow. It's these bunch of mechanics. It's called Classics for a Cause. They raffle off like classic muscle cars and stuff, you know, for charity.
Yeah.
And I'm like you, like, you know, I've got a couple of cars like the, you know, the Datsun 240Z and love a Turana SL5000. And so they've raffled those off. But every time you see the winners, they're always really uncool. And I'm like, oh, fucking hell, man. Like,
yes, exactly.
Like that nerd, like, he's not going to look
cool.
The nerds
won, Charlie. The nerds won.
But this is a raffle. It's completely random. Yet still the guys, I guess the guys who can afford to buy the most tickets.
He can afford all of the fucking tickets. You got one. Yeah, that's why.
Although I do think about those cars, like, because, you know, most of them, if it's a classic car, minimum 130 grand, right?
Yeah.
And unless you have a lock-up garage, that shit is getting stolen in 2 seconds flat.
Yeah.
Like, we've got a carport, but it's just an open street. Like, if anyone – because Gemma – I was showing Jen this, like, I think it was a combi van. They'd done up this beautiful done up in this combi van. And Jem's like, oh, we should enter that. And I was like, Jem, that thing would be gone in 5 seconds. Like, you know, when our mate had his Mustang on the street in Sydney and it was like they literally apparently just drove a flatbed truck, rolled it onto the truck and drove off with it. Like, it's that much of a big business for people, classic cars, that criminals are like decked out in flatbed trucks.
They've got it just wouldn't happen. So now we just got to drive around in these bloody CRV dad cars for the rest of our life, not feeling cool.
Yeah.
You know, what if I got because I got a Honda CRV, I'll just put black striping on it and write Sandman on it anyway.
No, just reckon get the ice cream tub on your head. Just write Sandman. Is that Cam Knight? Is that comedian Cam Knight running around going, brum, brum,
brum, brum, brum. I'm making the fucking V8 noise myself. Like, it's driving because it's a four-cylinder. So I've got the window down just going, brum, 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 brum,
brum, brum, brum, brum, brum. Now, Cam, we have to do a shorter episode today because speaking of fatherhood, I'm letting my daughter languish in daycare just so I could get this episode out. But thank you so much, and I'm sorry about screwing you around. I'd love to have you back on. We can talk for longer. Do you want to plug your Sydney Comedy Festival show?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm actually doing a solo show on April 8th. At the Sydney Comedy Store. It is an encore of last year's Sydney Comedy Festival show. So it's just one night, hour show on the April 8th. And then I made the smart move of booking in 3 weeks later to do the Sydney Comedy Festival at the Enmore Theatre, which is the 29th of April to the 1st of May.
Awesome.
So it's just three shows then. Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks, Matt.
Cam Knight at the Enmore. Okay, that is TOEFOP this week. Go to TOEFOP.com to check out this and all our other great podcasts. There's a new TOEFOP. There's a new Two Guys, One Cup. But for now, I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Cam Knight. Brum, 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 brum,
brum. Get that ice cream tub off your head.